Hi, everyone. You are on the fifth day of Smartest 2008 and the fourth day of our keynote presentations with Molly Gordon, Allison Stanfield, and Attorney DeBoss. If you have just joined us, you are in the right place. I am Arianne Goodwin, your host and moderator for this annual Smartest Art Career Conference. If you want to know what Smartest is up to, you can always visit us at www.smartest-telesummit.com. And Smartest is S-M-Artist, A-R-T-I-S-T. Today we're going to hear from Molly Gordon and Allison Stanfield back-to-back, and then we'll take a 15-minute break and return for Attorney DeBoss. Well, we might return for Attorney DeBoss. I just got this note from him this morning. Here's the downside of having a real live attorney as one of your keynotes. Here's his note to me. Unfortunately, Arianne, my case is going on. The jury is still out. Hopefully things will work out timing-wise for me to be available when I am to speak. I've arranged for another lawyer in my office to go to court to hear the verdict if I am still speaking. So we'll see. It's going to be a mystery day. We'll come to the afternoon and find out if we have our third one here. Well, I certainly can't think of a better way to start my day than with Molly Gordon, a master-certified coach known for her work helping accidental entrepreneurs, and the author of a brand new book. Molly, title, please.
The Way of the Accidental Entrepreneur, How to Grow a Business That Fits Just Right.
And I'm curious, why did you decide to write this book?
Oh, that's such a good question. I wanted to tell my story and really tell people how I got from A to Z, A being an artist kind of stalled in genteel poverty, to Z being an artist in the field of coaching and a successful coach. And I realized that it's a different story than most business books. You know, how to grow a business is not the same for an artist or a creative person or a body worker, anyone who has a heartfelt business. It's not the same to grow a business that fits just right as it is to grow a business that makes a lot of money. They're related, but they're not identical. And that's why I wrote it.
Oh, great. Molly is also the creator of Authentic Promotion, Grow Your Business, Feed Your Soul. This is a mind-body-spirit approach to embodying prosperity based on service, purpose, and lifelong learning. You can learn more at her website, authenticpromotion.com. You can also learn more by staying right here with us at Smartest. Molly, would you like me to return to open up the lines for questions at the end? I know I've passed them on to you. Did you get the ones I sent to you today?
I got the three you sent me, and I would love to have some time at the end for questions. And you've been doing this for a couple of days now. Your sense, whether it should be 5 minutes, 15 minutes, I don't know.
I would say let's give it 6 or 7 minutes because we have to, you know, working on the, I'm going to exhale you and inhale Allison.
Right,
because
right.
There's no wiggle room there. So
let's give it. And I am happy to answer questions in writing that come to you, anything that we don't get to during the teleconference.
Okay, that's great, Molly. Okay, I'm going to come back a little bit before the end of the session. I'm going to pop off and listen on the participant line so that I don't interfere with any background stuff. It's all yours, Molly. I'll be back.
Thank you.
In a little while.
All right. Well, hi, everybody. I'm sitting here in, believe it or not, sunny Suquamish, Washington, across Puget Sound from Seattle, and my heart's racing. I don't think I've felt quite this much stage anticipation, we'll say, in I don't know how long. I think it's because I feel so keenly today the dilemma of being an artist and wanting to make a living with your work. My style is fairly smart alecky, I should. And that's partly because that's how I've learned to survive in the world. I've developed a smart alec style. I'm the oldest of 8 kids. I've been around a lot of blocks. And yet, this whole topic of artists and money is very dear to my heart. So I guess that's why I want to make this prelude to ground what I'm going to say and share with you in my profound belief that art is a necessary and sacred function in our society. In my perspective in the Western world, fine arts, and God only knows what that means, where does that line begin and end, but the arts do not have a clear place in our economic system because of the consumer orientation of our economies. For one thing, art is not meant to be consumed. Art is meant to be savored. And that may be one of the dilemmas we face as artists, is how do you create something with the depth and the nuances and the skill and care that will be savored and then put it out as a product in a consumer economy. Now, I don't have any one-size-fits-all answers for that. And my experience is that dealing with reality always works better for me than dealing with the way I wish things were. So it is also my deep belief and my practical experience that noticing what things are, naming them, and then looking at them, studying them the way you might study a rose before you paint it, or study a sensation before you express it in color or dance or sculpture, to study reality with this open curiosity of how do I create a living from the reality that I'm with today. The same way that I wonder as I look at a piece of stone and sit with the impulse in my heart, in my imagination, in my hands, and wonder what is the next gesture I will make to bring out of this stone the life that I sense is in it. So that may sound rather abstract, and at the same time, as I said, this is where I think the foundation of any solution about making art and making a living has to begin. Because it is too easy to fall into complaint, and complaint doesn't move us forward. A complaint is kind of like an alarm. It's a great thing. It's a wake-up call. But can you imagine having your alarm go off at 6 a.m. and then letting it ring all day in the hopes that that will keep you on top of your game? I don't know about you, but that would drive me insane. And so it is with our complaints. As artists, as business people, let's let these complaints wake us up to a challenge, a problem, a desire. Let them be the call to creativity, to action. But if we stay in that complaint, it's like living with that alarm ringing all day long. And all that will do is make us crazy. So with that prelude, let's look at money dramas that keep you broke. Excuse me, I'm getting over a cold, so I've got a little bit of a frog here. It won't be news to any of you that money is, in many respects, a bigger taboo than sex or religion. It is, in many areas and many communities, far more socially acceptable to ask someone if they're gay than it is to ask them how much money they make. It is more socially acceptable to inquire of someone that you know is of Jewish heritage if they are a devout or a practicing Jew, or whether they affiliate with Judaism more as a cultural, an ethnic identity, than it is to ask them how much money they earn or how much they paid for their house. And there's nothing like a taboo for generating drama. The basis of drama in ancient history is conflict. If you studied a practical money-making major in college like I did, English literature, you will know that drama, all at the heart of drama is conflict. No conflict, no drama. No conflict, no plot. But the thing about drama, when we live them in real life as opposed to explore them on stage or in reading, is that a drama is never about the present moment. The whole arc of a drama is what happened then, the mess it landed us in, or the comic dilemma in the case of comedy, and how it's going to turn out in the future. There isn't a lot of drama in being fully present, because being fully present means to be fully at peace with reality. So one of the roots of money drama is taboo, and one of the consequences of that is that we're not living in the present and in reality. And let's take a little side trip here. This is not in your notes. A question arises certainly for me and maybe for many of you. If I'm at peace with reality, and the reality is that my bank account is empty, doesn't that make me a putz if I just accept it? And it's like, I was working with an artist last week, and her opening question in our coaching call was something to the effect of, if I just decide to be happy, and she kind of trailed off, and I finished with, does that make you a putz? Like, if I make the choice to be happy, am I going to have people walk all over me? Will I be some kind of fool? At the core of this question is a confusion between acceptance and passivity. Again, I'd like to draw an analog with the making of art. When you accept the nature of the tools you're working with and manipulate those artfully, skillfully, then they serve your creative vision. Whether you're painting or dancing, excuse me, sculpting, writing poetry, quilting, whatever. If you argue with the nature of your tool, if you want watercolor paper to behave like stretched canvas, you're in trouble. You're not going to get the opportunity to express or explore your vision because you're struggling with the materials of your craft. So acceptance of reality in the art world does not mean saying that it's okay not to make money. It just means getting real about what your options are and then getting creative about how to move forward. Another root of money drama is resentment. Resentment is the conviction that things should not be the way they are. He shouldn't have snubbed me. They should have accepted my work. She's only popular because she's good at blah, 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 which is another way of saying she shouldn't be more popular than I am. Another characteristic or consequence of drama is that they're very engaging. We get hooked in them. They're interesting. And they're not just mentally interesting. Dramas create a physiological response in us. The drama of me wanting to serve you well today and not to fail and to make good and useful points had my heart racing at the beginning of this phone call. We feel adrenaline. Depending on the nature of the drama, we may feel great sadness. We may go into depression. We can go into anger. We go into fight, flight, or freeze. And that hooks us. Those bodily sensations, particularly when they take place without our conscious observation and detachment, take on the character of reality. I feel angry, therefore I have been abused. I feel afraid, therefore I'm in danger. I feel frustrated and stuck, and therefore there is no way forward. So becoming conscious of these roots of drama and some of the implications of drama gives us a chance to make choices. So when I feel that flicker of anxiety, I can ask myself a question how do I want to engage with this group of people rather than fight against the anxiety or let it rule me. So I had a lot of fun drawing up 5 examples of money dramas. There are many other examples, and I offer these as a way to both offer some humor and spark your imagination so that you will notice the storyline or the narrative that you live when you're in drama about money. So the first one I call The Death of a Salesman. In this drama, you feel like you're beating your head against a wall around money, repeating the same mistakes over and over again, experiencing the same pains over and over, and all through it, you keep up this kind of dogged determination, trying the same things to get through it, and concealing your pain, and eventually you can fall into a great despair. Another drama, The Streetcar Named Desire. I love this one. I play all of these, by the way. This is Blanche DuBois, the sister of Stella, who arrives in New Orleans relying on the kindness of strangers. Even when you may not like playing a victim role, in this drama, you deal with that by taking on the kind of romantic trappings. It's all very, very big and very oh my and very Blanche. You're paralyzed and unable to take action. And it's worth noting that in this drama, the desire or dream is part of what keeps you stuck. Because we live in this drama holding on to our impossible dream, and we hold it as an impossible dream. When I believe that it is impossible for me to have what I dream of, you can come up and hand it to me on a silver platter, and I will not see it or believe it. Then there's high anxiety. In this drama, money is a roller coaster ride. It's up, it's down, this is a high adrenaline, a lot of salesmen live here, but I've seen a lot of artists live here too, and I have also. One way I've lived this as an artist is when I would create work and cut my prices real low to create cash flow. So there's a lot of activity, there's work going out and money coming in, but I'm losing money with every transaction. So I'm excited while this activity is going on, but at the end of the day or the week or the month or the quarter, I'm broke and I'm down. This is the keeping lots of balls in the air strategy of being with money. And we're never quite in the present. We're always going after the next big win, the next scam, the next idea, the next possibility. Then we come to Gladiator, and I suspect that each of you as an artist is going inside and kind of finding your references for each of these yourself. And if you're not, I really invite you to do that. And when you listen to this again, to just let yourself soak up in these dramas and let your own drama kind of percolate to the surface. In the Gladiator drama, money's a battlefield. Sometimes you fight with your partner, sometimes you fight with yourself, sometimes you're fighting with the tax collector or the utility company, your employer if you have a day job. The names and the faces change, but you never run out of reasons to wage war. And then one of my favorites, The Big Chill. In this drama, the way I've lived this drama is I've made my choices, and this is exactly where I was toward the end of my career as an artist. I've made my choices, and for the most part, I'm happy about it. I'm glad to be doing the work I do. I like my work. Sure, it'd be nice to travel. I'd like to be able to write bigger checks to charities. it'd be real interesting to take a vacation, and I have quite a few judgments, most of them unconscious or half-conscious, about people who can afford all that. On some level, I'm holding that I'm a better or more authentic person because I don't have a lot of money. And this is the state that I call genteel poverty. It's not poverty at all, in one sense. I was eating three meals a day. I had a roof over my head. And my husband was paying bills. But it was a very small box of my own construction. And the real key to the big chill is that while I had complaints about money, I had a very self-satisfied or a pretty self-satisfied kind of subtext. But every once in a while, that mask would slip, and something in me would wonder if I wrote in the notes if I was copping out, but it's more like I would sense some sliver of dishonesty or disconnect. Now, the thing about any of these or any other money dramas that is really, really important to know is that no matter how much money you have, when you're living in a drama like this, you're broke. If you don't have enough money now, they will keep you broke. And if you start earning money, you will never earn enough to be happy as long as you're in a drama. How can you be broke if you have plenty of money? Easy. The only time we have power with money is in the present moment. Just as, again, I go to the creative process, the only time I have potency as an artist is when I'm making art. Now, that might include imagining art. It doesn't always mean hands-on. But I am an artist when I am living in the process of art making. And I have money when I am clear and present with the money in my life, with my intentions around money, with my plans to get more, spend it, use it, invest it. So the very first key to ending a money drama is to get into the present. And there's one very simple question to ask to do that, and that is, what would you like to have different? So I'd like you all right now to jot down one or more things that you want to have different related to money. And I'm just going to go silent for 30 seconds or so, give you a chance to go inside. And in that silence, when you come back and listen to this later, let that be a reminder to you that silence is one of the very best ways to come into the present. I'm sure that each of you has experienced the role of silence in being an artist and creating, and that silence will also truly help you when it comes to being clear and honest about money, and that's what will empower you to take the right actions to earn more. So, having identified something that you want to have different, we can explore the stories that you have about that. The stories, the specific plays, if you will, coming out of a general drama. And for this, my favorite tool is the work of Byron Katie. And again, I want to address the practical aspects of this. My experience was that as long as I concentrated on what was missing, on what I didn't have, what I couldn't have, what wasn't fair, what didn't work. I was like a person with a broken arm trying to write a letter. By identifying my stressful thoughts and all those things that are preoccupying me and stealing my power and turning them around, I consistently have found pathways, actions, opportunities that were right for me, specifically for me. And that's what I'm wanting for you, is something specifically for you. And the experience that I've had and that my clients and students have had doing the work is that it brings you home to your right next step. And that is so much more practical than me telling you, do these four things to earn more money as an artist. Because what you hear when I say that may not have any relationship to the way you are and where you are in your life. But if you do the work, you will find the next step, the one right in front of your feet, the step that will reliably take you along the road to enjoying greater wealth, whatever that means to you. So the work consists of four questions and turnarounds. Before I go there, for those of you who may not know about Byron Katie, she is a woman from Barstow, California. And some 20 years ago, she was chronically and severely depressed, agoraphobic, lived in her bedroom. And this woman was so far from being a happy camper. One day, she is living in this depression, and the next day, she is free of it. And the way she describes or accounts for the difference is the work. It's the realization that the only thing that lay between her and happiness was a stressful thought. And the work is how she deconstructs stressful thoughts so that we can meet reality and take the action that's right for us. So the first of the four questions is it true? The second, can I absolutely know that it's true? This is a new question. This is not a trick to make you rethink your answer to question one. So let's say I need to pay my mortgage payment. Is that true? Well, yeah, I believe that's true. And I answer, can I absolutely know that I need to pay my mortgage payment? Then I go inside again and I find out. My answer might be yes or no. There are no wrong answers to these questions. There's only your answer. Question three, how do I react when I believe that thought? What happens to me when I believe that thought? As artists, you are uniquely well-equipped, I think, to do this work because you know how to explore the imaginal world. And so you can go inside and just watch as the pictures and images and sensations unfold of what the world is like and how you live your life when you're thinking the thought that is bringing you stress. After exploring that, and there are some sub-questions to that, by the way, that appear in your notes. After exploring that, question four is, who would I be without that thought? Now, this is not an instruction to get rid of the thought. This is, again, an artistic exploration. Who would I be without that thought in this same situation? And to go inside and notice what world emerges from reality without my thought. And then finally, we turn the thought around. Turnarounds are reversals to the opposite and to the other to see if they could be as true or truer than the original thought. The purpose of a turnaround is to open the mind, just as an artist in the creative process may open her mind and heart what comes to me is when a painter looks at water, she may see green, orange, yellow, black, any number of colors. The person who looks at the water, who is not an artist and does not have that trained eye and that open mind, sees blue. The turnarounds open us to what's really in front of us. And we just ask, is it as true or truer? It's not about arguing with reality. So I'd like to work through, there's an example in your notes, but I'd like to work through with an example from one of the questions that came in today at the last minute, and that is any comments on how art businesses fare in a recession. So I'm just going to go inside for a moment and find a stressful belief that I have actually had about recession. And what I come up with is it's going to be harder to make a living. It's going to be harder to make a living. I just found that thought right on top. So in doing the work, it's important to write it down. Our minds race and run, especially when they're under stress. So I write down, and I'm actually going to do it right now, it's going to be harder to make a living. And then I ask myself the first question, is it true? Is it true that it's going to be harder to make a living? Well, I noticed that, yeah, that's been my experience in the past in a recession. And so I go back. Can I absolutely know that it's true that it's going to be harder to make a living? I'm finding no. As you go in with these questions, you may find a different answer, and that's great. Find the one that's true for you. One of the gifts of the work is it gives us a place to land. And it's so nice to land in the truth instead of what I looked for years, which was the right answer. So I find, no, I can't absolutely know it's going to be harder to make a living. I'm remembering some years back selling art when I went to a show where I was sure that I wouldn't sell anything, and I sold a bunch. I'm noticing one year when the month that had always been my slowest month was my biggest month. So I find for me I can't absolutely know that. How do I react when I think the thought it's going to be harder to make a living? Well, right away I notice my body. Something in my solar plexus and in my rib cage, just below my sternum, gets really tight. I find that my back curves forward. I hunch in, and my shoulders lift, and my breathing gets shallow. I feel what I would call anxiety in my upper chest and throat. I'm noticing a sense of sadness, like a little girl's sadness and hopelessness. And I see images of me sitting in my studio or my office, frustrated, not knowing what to do. And the strongest one that's coming through for me is I feel really stupid. That's what I experience when I believe this thought. I feel really stupid, like I'm doing everything I can and it's not making any difference, and what's wrong with me and why don't I know better, and yada, yada, yada. I notice that I spend a lot of time obsessing about what I should be doing, and I'm trying a lot of different things. In you know, lots of them all together. It's like trying to make five different soups at the same time, but in one pot. And then who would I be without the thought it's going to be harder to make a living? And what I do here is I go in and I see myself in that kind of flurried, harried, anxious and small place with the thought. And then I drop that story, and in my mind's eye, I'm looking around, and I see woman at a studio, in a studio, woman at a desk, the sun shining. Maybe I'm adding up some numbers. Oh, and then where I go is I see my surroundings come into focus. This is a really interesting thing when we're tripping out on stressful thoughts. The reality that I'm surrounded by books and yarn and beautiful things completely disappears. But when I drop that thought, here I am sitting in my beautiful studio. So without that thought, I am an artist in her studio on a sunny day. Turning the thought around, it's going to be harder to make a living. Well, the first turnaround is, it's going to be easier to make a living. Could that be as true or truer? Well, This is interesting, and I'm doing this on the fly, if you can't tell. What I'm noticing is it could be as true, because if indeed we're in a recession, I might find some opportunity. What I saw is maybe shifting venues and going either from a real high-end venue to a low-end venue, or what's more likely in many recessions is realizing that my consumer-oriented lines are not going to sell when people are buying less, might as well focus on the luxury pieces, the pieces for collectors and patrons and galleries that are more or less recession-proof. So depending on my medium and depending on my creative goals, I may find it easier to make a living because I stop chasing the smaller product sorts of cash flow. It's going to be harder to make a living, another turnaround. I'm not finding another one that pops right out at me. You could play with, it's going to be harder to make a dying, reversing various words. You know, it could be that when I'm under the gun making a living in a recession, it's harder for me to kill my creativity and my initiative because the reality is I have to get on the stick. Maybe outside of recession, I'm making just enough that I don't quite need to organize my financial ducks, put my financial ducks in a row. And so maybe it's harder to kill my initiative in my bank account when I'm more realistic under the pressure of a recession. So these are just some ways to explore using the work, using one of the questions that came in today. And I want to briefly address another question that came in about there not being a relationship. In the panel the other day, I made a statement, something to the effect of there not being a relationship between validation and selling art. And the excellent question came in a society where money is a major form of exchange, worth, hence validation, what does that mean? And the distinction I'd like to draw is between creative art or artistic validity and the validity of the marketplace. Absolutely, when you are selling work, making a commercial exchange, whether or not you can sell it and get paid for it establishes whether or not your work is valid in the marketplace. What it does not establish is whether or not your work is spiritually valid, artistically valid. Was Van Gogh's work less valid because it didn't sell in his lifetime? That was my only point. And when an artist questions his or her creative validity because of the response of the marketplace, I think that's a sad mistake because I believe that what you're doing, what we do, is sacred. and that whether or not it turns out to be the best way for you to make a living has nothing to do with whether or not you have an important gift to give the world. And so that's all I meant there. And then finally, there was a question about business names for artists. I have a business name, and I'm wondering whether or not to keep it or focus on using my actual name, which is long and hard to spell and pronounce. But the business name is starting to feel unnecessary. What should I do? My sense there, the question that comes up for me is, what serves your audience best? If you have an audience of collectors who are going to identify over time, you know, and this could be whether you're doing porcelain collectibles or corporate paintings for corporate offices, if they're going to identify and be best served by your name, however unpronounceable, then that's what I would go with. If you have an audience, if you've got a greeting card line, and it's far easier for the reps and the stores and shops to sell your licensed work through a company name, then you can keep that. And it may be that you want to differentiate two levels of your work from, say, the originals that go with your signature name, your own name, and licensed work that may have a studio name. So that's not a definitive answer. And to find the right answer for you, I would ask your audience what's going to serve them best, what's going to make it easiest for them to relate to you, to find you, and to spread the word about you. And Ariane, I sense that you're back.
That's a good sensing there. Am I making little sounds in the background here?
Very faint, very faint.
We probably have time for one, possibly two questions.
Okay.
So I'm going to open up the lines, and this is how it's going to work, everybody. You're going to say your name first, and it'll just be the first name that I hear. I will acknowledge you back with your name, and then you'll know, I've heard you, and you can go ahead and ask your question. All right. Hang on, everybody. Okay. I've unmuted. Oh, we sound like we have a very tricky line. So I'm going to take a question, and then I'm probably going to mute us again for the answer. Does someone have a question?
Judy.
I heard Judy.
Wow.
I don't know. Can you hear okay, Molly?
I can barely. Judy, you want to just say your question?
Okay. My question is, if I create my art without... I'd like to create my art without money being at the forefront.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to put this on mute.
Okay. So, Judy, I hear that you would like to create your art without money being at the forefront. And I'm imagining that your question is about how that relates to art and earning a living. There are any number of ways this could work out. And one possibility is to, and a very good one, is to make your living doing something else. You know, that's what I do now. And the primary reason is that I realized my artwork is really for me. I would love for it to touch the world, but it's not really about communication. It's about self-exploration. And because of that, it works much better for me to put my paid creative efforts into work that is really based on serving other people. Because otherwise, why should they pay me? It could be that I intend my work to serve the world, and my experience is that finding an economic proposition that will support me to do it by selling that work is really difficult. In which case I find another way to make a living that's about earning the money. And I give myself the gift of time and making my art a priority. And I may make some lifestyle choices. My husband and I are so lucky because we're very clear that we'd rather have time than money. And so we can flex up and down from, you know, a couple thousand dollars a month max. And we're also capable of spending a lot more than that. So that's it in a nutshell, and if I didn't get quite at your question, I'd love to see it in an email through Ariane, and I will be happy to answer it.
Thank you, Molly, so much.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome.
We can't thank you enough for coming back this second year. I'll send any follow-up questions your way. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thanks, sweetie. Bye. Thank you, everyone.